You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll look at the biggest Wisconsin news from the past week, including the latest from the Budget Committee hearings.
First, Japanese food is delicious, but it can look difficult to make to home cooks like me. But it's not, says Amy Kaneko, an American who married into a Japanese family and spent 2 years living and cooking in Japan.
Kaneko relied on her mother-in-law, among others, to help share some of the techniques and tools of Japanese cooking, and now she's taking on the role of teacher.
Amy Kaneko joins us now. She's the author of the new cookbook, Let's Cook Japanese Food. Amy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, what was it like when you moved to Japan, when you started cooking for your new family? What were some of the big adjustments you had to make coming from an American palate?
It is kind of crazy. You know, I had never eaten sushi until basically I moved to Japan, and then I realized, oh, there's this whole world of delicious food out there, as I think you do once you start to travel. And, you know, marrying into a Japanese family, I realized there was so much more than the sushi and the tempura and the things that we were eating in America that was available to cook. So I really wanted to learn all those things and then share that knowledge with my friends and family here.
And sounds like you really had a blast trying new things. You had lived in Japan prior to your marriage as well, and it sounds like you made it your mission and people went out of their way to give you interesting stuff to eat.
Well, I do like to eat a lot of different things. I grew up right outside of New York, and so we went into New York during the week, and we would eat all kinds of crazy stuff. And so when I moved to Japan, I just did that same thing. And people they delight in sharing their food with you, you know. And so there were all these wonderful people who shared all kinds of things with me, and I ate everything. And some of it was a little bit weird, to be sure. But then some of it I found to be a lot more familiar than I expected. You know, there's a big culture of adopting cuisines in Japan to the Japanese taste, but there's many ingredients and dishes that might seem somewhat familiar to a Western palate, and I was surprised to find that.
Yeah, what kind of things did you find? You write that, you know, Japanese food isn't this one thing fixed in time. It's trading and borrowing with lots of other cultures.
That's exactly right. You know, Japan wasn't open to the Western culture until late 1800s, so they really had a lot of time to develop their own cuisine. And then when the floodgates opened at that time, a lot of influences from other countries made their way in. For example, I don't know if you know this, but tempura is actually a Portuguese dish that the Japanese adapted to their tastes and their ingredients and made it uniquely Japanese. So when you think of tempura, you think, oh, it's Japanese food, but actually it came originally from Portugal. And then there's these wonderful places there, all these cafes that are more French than France, I think. They do everything to the 10th degree. It's really wonderful, and they can cook things like nobody's business in France or in Europe or so on, but they're taking them and they're adapting them to Japanese ingredients and tastes and palates.
I want to go back to tempura. It's a aspect of Japanese cuisine that I love, but sometimes I feel guilty about it. But reading your cookbook, I feel like, oh, maybe it's not so bad, because you point out that really well done Japanese tempura is not that greasy. The food does not absorb that much of the oil. So what's different there?
That's exactly right. You know, most of Japanese food, even some of the foods in this book that have those Western influences, still retain a light and fresh mentality to them. So when you're cooking tempura, for example, you know, people are afraid of frying, like you said. People are afraid of the greasy flavor, or it might not, you know, come out right. It might be too heavy. But actually, it's a very light, thin batter that's so light you put ice cubes in it to make it really, really light. And then you fry it just so briefly at a high temperature that it doesn't have time to soak up that grease, and it's absolutely crispy and delicious. So you should not have a fear of frying.
And one tip that I love on the frying here, and this is something I've failed on other forms of deep frying, don't put too much in the oil at once, because it cools down the oil, ruins everything, right? That's key?
Bingo. That makes too much stuff in the oil makes like the soggiest fry you're ever going to have, and you'll be very disappointed. So take your time, be patient. I think that's the one thing about this kind of cooking is, you know, there's really nothing you can do too far wrong. You just want to take your time. Be patient, use techniques that you already know, and then apply them to these ingredients and these methods.
We're talking with Amy Kaneko right now about her new cookbook. It's called Let's Cook Japanese Food. She's an American who spent 2 years living in Japan with her Japanese husband. And you also write about one of my favorite foods. Not too many places to get it, at least that I found in Wisconsin, okonomiyaki, which is, I don't know, I should let you describe it, the pro, but I think of it as kind of a pancake.
I think you're exactly right. Some people actually call it a Japanese pizza or pancake. Pizza's not exactly right. It's not topped with cheese and sauce, but it does have that kind of aspect. It's a big round food. The thing about okonomiyaki, and okonomiyaki is just the Japanese word for as you like it, things that you like. And that's all that means. And what's so great about this recipe is its flexibility. Really, you can use any ingredients that you have on hand or that you like and mix them into this batter, and you just cook it on a nonstick frying pan or a griddle. It's super easy to accomplish in a Western kitchen. And I have to say, kids love this dish. This is, if you're going to try something in this book and you want your kids to eat it and have success, I would start here. Super easy to make.
We've got a link to a recipe for this, by the way, okonomiyaki, on the Central Time Facebook page. You can try it out at home. And as you were saying, Amy, you can put different toppings in it, different fillings. What are some of the most common things we'll see in okonomiyaki? That
you
we should make an Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, it occurs to me, actually.
This is a Wisconsin version.
Oconomowoc Miyaki. We'll work on that. Anyway, Amy, good fillings for that.
That one has brats.
10 times fast. it's actually a dish that is made of, I think, leftovers. Number one is cabbage. You're always going to have chopped cabbage in it, and that's like bulks the thing up. You're going to have eggs in it, which you're going to mix up. Your typical flour, baking powder, salt. These are all things that you will definitely have access to. I put green onions in mine because I really like green onions. I use bacon because in Japan they have this awesome, like very thinly sliced pork belly, which is a little harder to get here. If you can get that, by all means do it. So you can cook that up a little bit first before you throw it into the batter because raw bacon is not very delicious. So you do want to cook that a little bit first. You could put chicken in it. You can put shrimp in it. My kids really like shrimp and cooked squid in there. So it really runs the gamut of the ingredients.
And the sauces are kind of key to this, too. What are these sauces like on top of it?
Yes, the sauces are super key because otherwise it's going to be a delicious pancake with all these fillings. It'll still taste really good. But I think you do want to seek out the sauces. And these are really typical sauces that will go a lot with a lot of the recipes in this book, frankly. The first one is called okonomiyaki sauce, or tonkatsu sauce is also a good substitute. And really what that is, it's like a Worcestershire-based sauce. If you ask me, and probably if you ask a Japanese person, they'll say, what are you talking about? But it tastes to me like A1 sauce, frankly. And in a pinch, if I didn't have these sauces, I would try a little A1 sauce because that's a very heavy Worcestershire taste. So you drizzle that over the top of your pancake. Then the other thing that you put on here is mayonnaise. And I happen to love mayonnaise on things. And it really works on this recipe, so it gives a little creamy taste. There's this brand in Japan called Kewpie Mayonnaise. And you squeeze it over. It comes in a squeeze tube, and it's really fun to work with. And each individual diner does that to their own tastes. The other toppings that are typical include aonori. So you might be familiar with regular nori, seaweed, which is the grilled seaweed that goes on the outside of the sushi roll. So This is a variation on that. It's a very bright green, blue color, and it's flaky. And it looks really pretty on top of the okonomiyaki, but it also lends like a really nice little sea taste to it. But if you can't find that, you can also use regular yakinori, just regular, the sheet nori that you're used to, cutting up small. But all of these ingredients, happily, are really easily available in a lot of supermarkets these days and also online. So you can find any of these things. Kikkoman makes all these sauces. They're in my local supermarket, and I live in Colorado, so it's not like a hotbed of, Asian cuisine there.
You mentioned
so I can
that
find all of these things.
You mentioned that mayonnaise, Amy, and you had a recipe for salmon on mayonnaise, and you said, so you mentioned that Japanese brand. You also give a little tip for turning any old mayonnaise into something like that. How can we doctor it to make it more of a Japanese mayonnaise?
You can doctor it, and I have done this when I'm in a pinch. I'll take regular old Hellman's or whatever kind of mayonnaise that you have, and I will thin it a little bit with some lemon juice or maybe even a little bit of rice vinegar, and that little extra tartness and sour taste. Don't thin it too much, but just enough to add that little bite to it. And that makes it taste more like the typical Japanese mayonnaise.
Could you mix it with something like wasabi? What would that give you?
That would give you a nose freeze. You know how you get that wasabi brain freeze? I mean, you can absolutely mix mayonnaise and wasabi, though. That tastes really good on some things. I would try that maybe on some grilled steak and have a wasabi mayonnaise on the side. Ooh. That could be really good.
Well, we're talking right now with Amy Kaneko, an American who spent years living in Japan, and also with her Japanese husband. She's in the States now again, and is the author of the cookbook we're talking about today. It's called Let's Cook Japanese Food.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried Japanese food at home? What tips do you have to share? Do you have Japanese heritage? Is this part of your childhood growing up? What are some of your favorite foods, some of your tips? If you've cooked it, how is Japanese home cooking different from what we find in restaurants? And if there's something that you've had at Japanese restaurants, you'd like some advice on how to make at home, give a call. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post and find a couple recipes on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And right now we're picking up our conversation about Japanese home cooking. And you can join us at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite Japanese dish that you like to make? Maybe to eat out at a restaurant, you want to see if you can recreate it at home. What is the secret, do you think, to getting some of these flavors right? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Amy Kaneko is with us. She's an American home cook and a cookbook author. She spent years living in Japan and is married into a Japanese family. She learned how to cook Japanese food. She's sharing her recipes in her new book. It's called Let's Cook Japanese Food.
And let's talk about another recipe now. At least in the neck of the woods where we are in Madison, Amy, there are ramen shops popping up all over the place. It seems like it's really having a moment, at least in Wisconsin. What goes into a really delicious bowl of ramen?
Well, ramen is one of those national dishes, and it's as individual as the people who make it. And that's what's so fun about it and makes it so accessible, I think, for a home cook here in the U.S. There are lots of ramen shops everywhere, not just Wisconsin. I'm super happy to see that. So what makes it is the noodles, of course, and then the broth. And so at home, you know, you don't have the hours to cook the pork bones and the chicken bones and so on. I really use chicken broth, but I really spice it up with some of those really unique flavors that work really well in ramen, like a chili bean paste, which is like has a little garlic in it, a little hot red pepper, a little bit of oil, and then, of course, garlic. I use chicken broth in mine, sesame seeds. Those are all really great tastes to put into your ramen.
We've got a link to the special pork and sesame ramen noodle soup on the Central Time Facebook page. You have one of the best cooking instructions I've seen in a cookbook, Amy, when you're getting ready to make the ramen. Discard the flavor packets from the ramen packages. Because those,
yes.
I used to eat this, 10 cents a packet or something back
right.
in the day for ramen. Those flavor packets were really kind of gross when I look back on it.
They are really kind of gross. They are pretty salty, and, you know, you can make your own flavor packet, I think, much nicer than those. But the noodles, on the other hand, especially if you live somewhere where it's difficult to get the fresh noodles, are totally usable in the home version of ramen. So throw that packet out and take the ramen noodles themselves and just boil them up really quick. But watch them, because you don't want to overboil them. You don't want them mushy. You know,
yeah.
The texture of the noodle is still really important.
And walk us through this particular recipe, if you would, Amy. And what if you are throwing out that flavor packet? What are you putting in instead?
Well, first of all, I have to call out, this is my husband's special pork ramen. His name is Shohei. And Japanese husbands are not famous for cooking at home, but they usually have three or four dishes that they cook to perfection, and ramen is one of them. So this is his recipe. And his special taste is he likes to put sesame oil in there. Chicken broth is the base, because that's what we can get. It's very easy, and we just use chicken broth. You can use homemade or canned. Put a little sesame oil, a little bit of that chili bean paste, which, again, is like a... it's like a spicy, garlicky, but not too spicy, red pepper sauce. And I found that at local supermarkets. Again, you can order that online. Definitely add some garlic. If you're a garlic lover, add a lot. If you're not, just add a little bit. You could put some ginger in there, some ground ginger. You could put green onions, definitely green onions in there. And that's what's going to flavor your broth in a way that is fresher and more delicious, frankly, than what you're going to get in the packet.
And this is a beautiful-looking recipe as pictured in your cookbook. And I wanted to ask, do these recipes look so good because they're in a cookbook, or is it common in Japanese food to, you know, it's not just tasty, but it's meant to be a visual treat, too?
It is meant to be a visual treat. Japan is very famous for doing things to a beautiful design sense. You know, everything has a really great aesthetic to it, including the food. However, comma, I am just a home cook. So the person who cooked and styled this for the cookbook has far more skills than I do, and she did an absolutely beautiful job there. It doesn't matter how it looks. I'm telling you that. I'm giving you an out right now.
Thank you.
You just want it to taste good. That is the number one thing. And then you can work on prettying it up later.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Jeff joining us from Pelican Lake. Jeff, hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi,
I just turned on the radio and I heard you talking about Japanese food, so I was going, well, that's right up my alley.
What do you want to share?
I'm the third generation Japanese. My parents were born in Los Angeles area, and then they moved to the Milwaukee area, and now I'm retired and I live up north at Pelican Lake. And my favorite dish or flavor is the teriyaki. So it's usually teriyaki chicken, or it can be beef or salmon.
Right. That's right. Teriyaki is so popular and so easy to achieve at home. Do you cook it at home, Jeff?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I just finished my last piece of chicken teriyaki. I like to use the thigh.
He's eating it as we speak.
Well, it's a good picnic food, and once you cook up a batch, you can just put it aside, you know, in the refrigerator and just take it out, you know, as you just warm it up a little bit. Or, you know, you can eat it cold, too.
So, Jeff, do you make your own teriyaki sauce?
Yes.
What goes into yours?
Well, ginger, garlic, I have to substitute for, like, rice wine because it's hard to find sake up here.
Mm.
You know, so
that
we put
sense.
Sherry in or something like that. And I think it passes. You know, it's pretty good. And, of course, there's a lot of sugar in it and soy sauce, or as I call it, shoyu. You know, and, it's easy to make. And some of the recipes for chicken teriyaki, you have to marinate it, like, overnight, and they're better. I've gotten to the point where I just thaw the chicken thighs out, and then I put them in a big kettle, and I put the sauce in there to cover, and then I just simmer it on top of the stove for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and then I take it out, and I finish it in the oven.
Oh,
wow, that's a unique way of doing it. That sounds really good.
It's really fast, you know, because then all you do is you do your sauces, and everything goes in the same pot. You don't have to have a separate bowl. The sugar dissolves in the heat right away. And then you just simmer it, and then the house smells great.
Wow. You can tell Jeff is an expert at this. How does that stack up to how you've been preparing it, Amy? Is this one of those things where the individual cook puts their own spin on how they do teriyaki?
They kind of do. You know, teriyaki is exactly what Jeff said. It is that basic triumvirate of flavors, the sake, the sugar, and the shoyu, the soy sauce, as we just said. And you can use as much sweetness or as little as you like. You know, my husband, for example, likes it less sweet, so I don't use as much sugar when I'm cooking it and he's going to be eating it. But when the kids are eating it, I definitely do up the sweetness. One of the things that you might want to look for, Jeff, is, you know, ordering online or something, the mirin, which is a sweetened cooking wine. And that adds some sweetness, but without the real sugary overload taste. It helps caramelize your sauce even more, your teriyaki sauce. And a caramelized teriyaki sauce is exactly what you're going for. But it sounds like your method would work really well.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jeff. We're talking to Amy Kaneko. Her new cookbook is Let's Cook Japanese Food. Staying with that teriyaki, I'm looking at your salmon teriyaki recipe, and you say Americans maybe misunderstand this. It shouldn't be a swamp of teriyaki sauce. It's a glaze. A little bit goes a long way, you're saying.
That's correct. And if you know, the picture in my book will show you how the sauce caramelizes down, and it becomes really thickened up, and then that becomes a really nice glaze over the fish or the chicken. So you're not eating big, you know, dollops of sauce. You're just tasting this beautiful, sweet, caramelized shoyu taste. So good.
I wonder if we can talk about something really basic, but that can be hard to get perfectly right. What about cooking rice and getting it so it's not burned at the bottoms? It's something that doesn't get crusty, but it is cooked all the way. Do you have any recommendations there, Amy?
Well, I've been there many times with the crusty rice on the bottom of the pan. If I am cooking it on the stovetop, I use a nonstick pot because I'm really aware of the sticking on the bottom. To be very, very honest with you, I haven't cooked rice in a pot in a really long time because I just went online and got myself a rice cooker. You can get them for like $20, and That was the best $20 I ever spent, seriously, because it cooks it to perfection. It kind of steams it for you at the right temperature. It won't stick, and then it will sit and hold for you at that temperature, which makes life much easier. But if you cook it, there is a recipe for cooking it in a pot, and here again, I would recommend the nonstick, and it's about the proportion of the water to the rice and letting it steam without lifting up that lid and peeking.
That sounds fantastic. I'm pretty good with the stovetop rice cooking, but we do have a rice cooker in the house for my wife to use. Amy, leave us with some encouragement if we're still daunted by the concept of home Japanese cooking. Talk us into it.
Well, I don't want you to be daunted. That was my whole point in writing this book, is because I realized there was a whole wealth of cuisine that we didn't know here in the U.S. and that people were needlessly intimidated by it, because really the ingredients and the methods are quite similar to what you already cook with, just used in a different way. So, for example, the tonkatsu, which is a fried pork cutlet, very, very easy to do. If you've ever fried any kind of cutlet at all, this is just using a different type of breadcrumbs and adding the right sauce on top. I'm a home cook. I'm not a chef, you know, but I can turn out these beautiful Japanese meals in the same time that it takes me to cook a regular meal during the week. And I think if you try these recipes, you'll find that you can too.
We'll leave it there for now. Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Arigatou gozaimasu.
And goodbye to you as well. That's Amy Kaneko, author of Let's Cook Japanese Food, been talking about how to cook authentic home-style Japanese dishes. Now, we have two of her recipes on the Central Time Facebook page, Shohei's special pork and sesame ramen noodle soup, and then
Okonomiyaki.
I'm gonna
help you out
there. Yeah, I had it the first time, and then I lost it. And I really want someone in Econowoc to make some okonomiyaki. Right, so go online, find that recipe, and take a picture of it and send it to us. This needs to happen. Maybe go to the Welcome to Econowoc sign.
This is a tongue twister. Okonomiyaki.
Okonomiyaki. Okonomiyaki.
There you go.
We can say it. You can do it. And if you if you make any of these recipes, let us know. We'd love to see how it turns out. Anything you're looking to try this weekend?
I'm actually seriously considering. I've never made my own okonomiyaki, and there's this beautiful recipe.
Love this stuff.
I do love it. My kids love it. It's delicious. It doesn't seem like it's hard to make based on the book. So yeah, it's a perfect chilly Wisconsin weather kind of meal. Looks good. This is Central Time.